Hey everyone, this is Paul from the Atypical Rainbow. You've guessed it, this is a content warning. The upcoming episode, Rainbow Dissection, Misinformation, is going to touch on the topic of abortion. If this topic is a sensitive one for you, we would discourage you from listening to this episode, although we only talk about it for maybe a quarter of the whole episode. Otherwise, if this is distressing to you, we encourage you to seek help, talk to your local medical professional, or call Lifeline on 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. Thanks very much, and we hope you enjoy the episode if you do listen to it. Welcome to the Atypical Rainbow. I'm Paul.
And I'm Grant.
Before we get started, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Atypical Rainbow, where you can get interesting news articles about autism, about queer news, and where we announce new episodes and upcoming episodes. So a good way to keep a track. And be sure to check out our old episodes on acast.com. Just search for the Atypical Rainbow. We're the only one there. So, today's episode is in the series The Rainbow Dissection. We're going to be talking about misinformation.
So the reason this was brought up was because in Victoria, which is the state we live in, there's recently been changes to the law basically saying that gay conversion therapy cannot be forced upon children. And the advocates who are against gay conversion therapy being banned are basically saying that parental rights are under attack.
Mm.
That you're like... we got a flyer which
from the Australian Christian Lobby.
From the Australian Christian Lobby, basically saying that because this law has passed, your neighbours will be able to have you arrested and put in jail if you have the wrong conversation with your child.
Yeah.
So we thought that we would do an episode about misinformation generally around queer issues. We may at some stage in the future do misinformation about autism, but this one's going to be basically just queer.
Yeah. So one of the things on this flyer that that struck me was this statistic. I can't remember exactly what it was. Something like 80% of people who go through the transition process to go from one gender to another desist. Now, I felt that wording was really odd and that number unexpectedly high. And I don't buy it, frankly.
Well, it's a very hard thing to measure. Because, yeah, I think you can choose to measure in different ways to get the result that you want. Like, what are you deciding is the point where someone fits in the category of possibly transitioning? Like, is it a boy putting on high heels, which I've spoken about before, which has nothing to do with being trans most of the time?
Mm.
So if you include all those people who ever put makeup, like any boy who put makeup or high heels or a dress on for dress-ups, and you include all those, then yes, you're probably going to have a high amount of them don't transition.
Mm.
But... if you only include kids who would be, you know, going to the gender clinic at the hospital, which requires a persistent gender identity issue, then the statistics are probably not going to be what they were quoting.
Yeah, and this is what I get frustrated at, because I know, at least personally, and I'm certainly not speaking for every doctor in the world ever, but I try to be fairly pragmatic about these sorts of things, and certainly the way that medical guidelines are written, they are advertised as guidelines, so they're not strict rules, but it's designed to try and allow for people to, you know, change their minds or have options or have variations, and to be painted as this sort of like the wording of the flyer is something like, you know, an irreversible process. I'm like, well, it depends on at which point you start the process.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about, you know, small children going through an irreversible process, but that's not true.
No.
Like, social transition is basically the only thing that happens before puberty.
Yeah.
And at the point of puberty, it's probably puberty blockers.
Which are reversible.
Which are reversible and not exclusively used for trans children.
Mm.
So... A lot of people transition socially as adults and don't even do anything that's permanent.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the nature of being trans, in that there's this sort of black and white feeling that you have to, you know, physically change entirely to the point where you might, you know, have surgery to change genitalia, but that's not the case for everyone. Now, from my limited experience working in a trans-friendly clinic, you know, I kind of saw the variance. And in Australia particularly, one of the barriers is, in fact, cost and availability. So there just aren't that many surgeons around that do it. And the ones that do it, it's quite expensive. See, but I don't think that's necessarily the only reason why people don't necessarily have the surgery, because it's not always necessary to define yourself by a certain gender to have the surgery.
Yeah, a lot of people don't choose to have it. Like, if they have a severe psychological reaction to their own genitals, they might have bottom surgery, but not at the age of 3.
No.
As these advocates seem to want you to believe, or have failed to inform themselves well enough to actually believe that.
I suspect that, as with many of these lobbyists, they've just cherry-picked the thing that sounds good for them in their argument. And, you know, 80% is a very striking number, but doesn't really put it in context.
Yeah, you really need to have a better understanding of, you know, the scientific method behind it than a brochure would give you anyway.
Yeah, see, as a maths nerd, I resent the weaponization of statistics, because I get why statistics are necessary. I mean, this is medicine, right? This is why we have the recommendations we do, and why we choose the medicines that we do, because statistics tells us these things. It says this thing is more likely to work than this other thing, or it works on this value than others. But it gets really frustrating when people use it for stats for political purposes. And
yes, and a lot of people read stats out of context.
Yeah.
Like, I think the main thing at the moment with stats being out of context is probably coronavirus.
Oh, yes.
And vaccines, where people will take the stats of how many, you know, 99-year-olds died within 6 months of having the vaccine. That's not causation.
Yeah.
They're 99. So not everyone who, you know, gets hit by a bus after having the vaccine was like, had the bus magneted them by the vaccine. But being responsible people, the medical collective collects all the data just in case there's causation that they can determine later. And that's how there was causation seen for the blood clots. But not everyone who dies of something around the same time they had the vaccine is dying of the vaccine.
Mm.
But especially in Australia at the moment, there is a small political party who have a website where they just show statistics out of context to confuse people.
So I think back to the idea of this, the Australian Christian Lobby in this particular flyer, I think what upsets me most about it is that it's trying to isolate people who are already in an isolated position. It's so the way the flyer kind of words it is that, yeah, as you said, parents aren't even allowed to have discussions with their children about whether or not, basically to convince them not to, you know, transition socially or otherwise. It puts the parents' opinions over the child's needs, and that's what upsets me the most.
Yeah. So it wouldn't, like, you wouldn't get a flyer going, oh no, they've made a law saying that you can no longer get drunk and beat your child up. Where's parental rights?
Yeah. It's emotionally abusive. It really is. And
yeah.
And once again, what it bothers me as a professional is that it paints, like, therapists and doctors as these, like, peddlers. Like, if you don't, you know, give the child an opportunity to talk to a professional about their options and how it works, they're like, the professional's automatically going to say, okay, you want to transition, we're going to push you to do it now. And you're like, well, no, there's flexibility and malleability, and, you know, gender is a spectrum, and, like, we understand all those sorts of things. So it's really insulting to think that we're on a side of it, I guess. Like, we're on the patient side. That's the point.
Yeah. Like, it is very insulting to professionals that they would have this some sort of secret agenda to cause everyone to transition. Like, what? Like, we're trying to make everyone infertile by transitioning everyone in the world? So the humanity dies out? Like,
yeah.
I guess there are people who believe in satanic cults and lizard people ruling the world, so...
Yes, but those crazy people hopefully are not necessarily in power, although admittedly, who knows?
Yes, hopefully they are not in power, but also hopefully there aren't enough of them to be activated by these sorts of brochures to turn against the medical fraternity.
Mm. And, you know, these sorts of targeted attacks on the queer community is not... unusual. No, this is not only the first time that this has happened, you know?
Oh, no. Like, this, the slippery slope of marriage and how the world was going to end in every country that's ever allowed marriage equality and how the world never quite does end.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really any slippery slope when it comes to marriage equality. It's like the only result of marriage equality is that people get married.
Yep.
Like, even the arguments about kids, gay people were already having kids. Like,
yep.
We had kids before we had marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
These arguments were just insane. And sadly, no one's looking back going, oh, it's been 4 years. I will now apologize on behalf of the Australian Christian lobby because the world has not ended.
No, that would be too easy, apparently.
No, yeah, it would be weird to just like look back and go, wait, I was actually wrong.
Mm.
I now have some evidence that I was wrong.
And here's the thing, you know, if someone pointed that out to them, they wouldn't listen to it.
Oh, yeah. They might say some random thing like, oh, we can't fire enough gay teachers anymore.
Mm.
Which they can still do.
Yeah.
In Christian schools. So, I don't know. I don't know what they think this slippery slope was.
I still get really infuriated at the argument of how gay marriage ruined straight marriage. Like that, like, admittedly, I've been slightly triggered off by rewatching Parks and Recreation because there's this whole episode about it.
Is that the penguin?
The gay episode? Penguins. The gay penguins, yeah. They say that gay marriage ruins straight marriage for everyone else, and I'm like, how? How does gay marriage? Does it point at the fact that your marriage sucks and you're in a loveless relationship? Cool. You might have needed that before gay marriage became legal.
Yeah, I think if anything was going to destroy marriage, it would be no-fault divorce. But people don't really argue that because I think people can see the good of no-fault divorce because some people are married to really terrible people.
Or is it too late? Is it? See, this is what
I don't know. It's weird though because when no-fault divorce came in, there wasn't as much uproar as gays getting married.
Oh, okay.
And as some conservatives will say, as a conservative, you should be pro-marriage. So the more people who get married, the happier you should be, no matter what their gender is.
Yep. Yeah, I'm surprised that people weren't as against no-fault divorce, because the way I kind of feel like social movements are, the resistance often comes before the change, and then after the change, people just kind of die down. Like, it's not that it stops becoming a problem. Like, there are probably still people who want, you know, the reversal of gay marriage, in the same way that people want to reverse gun laws, right? But, you know, it's the lead up to it is often the noisiest, it feels to me.
Yeah. Like, I think it really does depend on the issue. So, gay marriage, I feel like it's died down a bit. Like, it's not as crazy. And I think Australia, our gun laws, there's so much evidence they've done a good job that it's really a fringe group as opposed to one of the two major parties like it is in America.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that never went away was the fight about abortion, and probably never will.
Mm.
So the fight against abortion predates, you know, the fight for marriage equality, but has not died down, even though America is determined as a constitutional right. The fight just continues.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
See, and the argument there is, it's largely philosophical, because it's about the idea of when you consider a child to be a child and not a cluster of cells.
Yeah, like the most interesting thing I've ever seen about it was someone who said, okay, so someone is anti-abortion, ask them this question. If you are in a building, maybe a parental planning building, and it's on fire, and there's a 3-year-old child and 1,000 embryos that have been fertilized, do you save the 1,000 embryos and let the 3-year-old child die?
That is interesting. Because the answer does feel obvious. Very yeah. Trolley problem, but yes.
Very trolley problem. But if those 1,000 embryos are children,
then you should be rescuing the 1,000 children, not yeah. the 1 3-year-old child. Yeah. Yeah.
So I've always thought that was interesting. But obviously, abortion has a lot of patriarchy. But then I guess marriage equality also has some patriarchy issues.
I don't know if it's just about the patriarchy. I mean, I agree it is about the patriarchy. I think the problem is death. I think that marriage equality in principle to people who are uncomfortable with queer people sounds like a bad thing, even though it has, in both situations, neither of them have a direct impact on the person giving the opinion, right?
Yeah.
I think the problem is that, you know, if you consider the, you know, abortion to be the death of an unborn child, as opposed to, you know, the destruction of cells that haven't really formed anything of great significance,
mm-hmm.
that's when it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, the argument for, you know, terminations is that you have to think about what would happen to that child's life if they were born. So, the, you know, people who are pro-life would rather see a child live terribly, if that's the situation that they were born in. And so I'm not saying every woman who has an abortion is clearly, you know, in a crappy social situation. But let's say they were. So they'd rather subject the child to a crappy life than they would have them, you know, be a new child, a new cluster of cells be born at a time when the woman was ready, when they felt that they were emotionally, financially, socially, whatever the factors were, ready to have that child.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the thing around the abortion debate comes to hypocrisy. Like, if you are anti-abortion, but also anti sort of a welfare that will actually assist people who have babies, or you are anti-abortion, but pro the death penalty, or you're anti-abortion, but won't do anything about mass shootings. I think that's where people get bothered, rather than it being a misinformation thing.
Yeah, that kind of double standard is really frustrating. But I think, in part, this kind of reminds me of shock horror Malcolm Gladwell, because in his book, The Tipping Point, he talks a lot about the idea of context. I quite literally this morning read a chapter that was all about the idea that people can have conflicting opinions depending on the context they're in. So, but the human mind is kind of built to classify people with equality in its entirety, and so it does feel like hypocrisy. This is not to defend pro-life people. They're clearly, I don't even have a good adjective for them, but...
Well, no, I don't think we should discount all pro-life people. I think some of them really do care.
But care enough to do what exactly? I think that's
the question.
Right? Like, okay, so obviously if your pro-life attitude leads you to... you know, harm a doctor or, you know, burn down a building. Okay, that's terrible, right?
Yeah, if you're a terrorist about it, which some of them are, then yeah, you're still a terrorist.
Yeah, but again, I think the problem I have with it is that these aren't choices that are being forced on people, but they're acting like it is. Like it's that classic kind of, if you have the option, you'll do it. If you can have sex, you'll do it.
If we, you know, allow marriage equality, everyone will be forced to have gay weddings.
Yeah. Right?
It's like, if you don't want to marry a man when you're a man, don't marry a man.
Like, it's such a stupid, infuriating argument. And once again, has nothing to do with you. Like, have an opinion, sure. You know, defund Planned Parenthood and blockade, like, Planned Parenthood? No, because it has nothing to do with you.
Yes, and also Planned Parenthood does a lot of things other than abortions.
Yes.
Which would be problematic if they went away.
Yeah. Obviously, we're referring to the criminalization of abortions in, like, what, 99% of circumstances the law that's currently passed in Texas.
Oh, yes. The law that's in Texas is insane. And if progressive turned around and used a very similar law against guns or Bibles or religion, it would still be insane. And these people would go crazy. But yeah, the law in Texas, for anyone who doesn't know, basically they made a law in Texas that anyone can sue anyone involved in an abortion, which gets around the fact that the Supreme Court can't overturn the decision because you can't determine who would be suing the person.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, it is so weird. It's basically the same as if someone made a law saying you could sue anyone who owned a gun. And it couldn't be overturned by a Supreme Court, despite the fact there's the Second Amendment, because you can't work out who was actually suing them. So, yeah, so there's websites where people will, like, just dob someone in on the website, and people from other states will just sue them.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it is truly, truly insane.
And it's conniving. Like, I think that's what...
Oh, yeah, it's...
It took someone a lot of thought to pass that kind of law. Like, that's really... Cause
it's... Basically, it's a law created to go around a constitutional right.
Mm.
And the fact that anybody supports a law that would go around a constitutional right and still thinks they're a good person is very questionable.
See, this is what worries me about having, you know, conservatives in power, is that, and unfortunately, not to compliment them, intelligent conservatives, because that's, again, that's a really conniving move. That's, like, it's not even just flat out.
So by intelligent, you mean more cunning.
Cunning, that's the word I'm looking for.
With a negative connotation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and if we're coming back to the idea of misinformation, someone taught them this. You know what I mean? Like, someone... So the person who thought up this law was taught by someone above them or associated with them about why abortion is bad and why it should be prevented at all costs.
Like that, oh, yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? I was wondering where you're going with
that. Yeah. Like, that's what worries me, is that these things spread. This kind of misinformation, these kinds of, you know, biased, unjust, inconsiderate beliefs get spread around. And... okay, do these things make you uncomfortable? Sure, you have the right to be uncomfortable. Do you necessarily have the right to go around telling other people what to do and setting it in law or creating a way to make it essentially impossible? No. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, but I guess, like, to take it down from, like, a law level to a more individual level, there is, like, the argument of the baker.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right, let's... recover that.
So if anyone doesn't know the argument of the baker, it's like,
you should know by now.
Does the baker have the right to refuse to make a gay wedding cake, basically?
Mm.
This magical baker that everyone talks about. This poor, poor baker. Which Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell actually just did a skit where they made a bakery.
What?
Well, they did a bakery where it's just all about this baker that everyone keeps talking about and how he doesn't want to make a gay wedding cake.
I mean, you know, it did happen, but it's probably, like with many stories and many concepts, as it's been retold again and again and again, it's probably lost detail and context and basically become, you know, an example for people to use in arguments.
And Will and Grace did the baker who refused to make a Donald cake. Trump.
Oh, yeah, it was a MAGA cake.
Make a MAGA cake, yeah. And then, yeah, it's like, do you have the right to refuse a gay wedding cake if you've made a penis cake? I suppose, to if you've never made a penis cake.
Yep.
But yeah, like, this idea of individuals' rights to make decisions based on their religion, which there was a lot of discussion about during marriage equality, and no one's really lost any religious rights. As I said at the time, I don't know who wants to force a baker to make a cake. I do not know anyone who's like, I'm going to use the law to force a church to have me that doesn't want me, have my wedding in the middle of their church. No one wants to be that vindictive on their wedding day. Like,
I'm not sure it's about vindictiveness. I think it's about this feeling that you have to fight for your rights.
Oh, no, like, I get people who want to fight for their rights, but, like, I don't imagine anyone's going out of their way to force uncomfortable bakers to make their gay wedding cakes.
I don't know. Like, I actually, I don't agree with that. I think there are people out there who see this as a moral fight. See this as
making a stand.
A righteous stand. I'm really bad with my words today.
That's okay.
Yeah, a righteous stand. That's
You've
the
used them up on being intelligent for the rest of the day.
No, use them up from staying up too late watching TV. That's the
that
problem.
Is true.
But
I was trying to make people believe you were better than you were.
Why?
Because they don't know you well enough to know it's not true.
But yeah, I think there are people out there who would use this as a righteous stand. I mean, look... You'd hope that both parties, the partners getting married, would agree to the fight, as opposed to one being really militant, the other one going, I don't know that person.
But do you think that's okay? Like, if I had suddenly gone around, like, forcing, you know, people to make wedding cakes and made our entire wedding about fighting a fight that we'd kind of already won...
So, you know what's interesting about that question is that it would depend on how much it affected me. Like, so if you wanted to do it, I would feel, as your partner, I should support you in your beliefs, mm-hmm. right? Even if I don't necessarily agree with them. Well, it's not that I don't agree with them, it's that I wouldn't necessarily agree with them as much as you would want it to, right? So rather than being oppositional, I'd be kind of passive. I'd be like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Look, if this is important to you, I say go for it. Just leave me out of it.
So you wouldn't go to a cake tasting where there's like these little 8-year-old women like glaring at you the entire time?
No.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind for my, you know, next wedding to you.
But maybe this is because of my overall philosophy in that, you know, if other people want to live their lives in a way that I wouldn't want to live my life, fine. As long as no one's being harmed by it and the people doing it are both consenting to it, great. Do what you like. Not my problem.
Yeah, like, I think I have a very similar philosophy where I think a lot of queer people just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
Like, they don't get to choose to be queer. They don't get to choose that, you know, a law needs to change for them to get married or a law needs to change for them to be able to, like, go to the bathroom. It's the other people who, I'm like, why can't you just leave these people alone?
Mm.
Like, all they want is just to be left alone.
Yeah.
But you're making your entire life about not leaving them alone? Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah. And going to great lengths to make it difficult. Like, yeah. Again, spreading around, you know, lies and false statistics and just going to a lot of effort to make these, you know, a certain group of people's lives difficult that, again, have nothing to do with them.
Yeah. And, like, the Australian Christian lobby is, I think, a very good example of that. Because, you know, they'll raise, you know, millions of dollars for the legal defense of someone who, you know, put on Facebook, you know, gays will go to hell. But are they helping homeless people? No.
Mm.
Are they providing money for women who choose to have their babies rather than abort them? No. Yeah. They're just spending all their money on hating the queers and fighting the queers.
Mm.
I just don't get it.
Well, it's not, again, it's not practical. It's philosophical. It's this sort of belief and, I mean, screw it. I'm attacking religion already. Let's go all in. You know, it's this belief that the, you know, the general sense, the ether of morality around society needs to be a certain way, right? So it's not about the details. They don't give a crap about the details. They don't give a crap about doing the practical thing, like supporting people who are suffering, or the homeless, or, you know, people who are living in poverty. No. They have to fight for the principle and the morality and this sort of, you know, untouchable mood and of society, because that's the thing that's important. And it just, I think for me, it's this excessive farsightedness. It's this idea that in order for them to go to heaven, they need all of society to be moral. And that's all they're doing. So they're working towards that rather than kind of looking at what's happening now, looking at the people who need their help, who could benefit from a community and could benefit from people supporting them. And it's kind of like, nah, you fend for yourself. God will look after you. We're here to look after ourselves and the morality of society.
Mm, yeah. And like, the other day I did actually think of a slippery slope argument, because there was people saying that they should be able to object to having a vaccine on religious grounds. And I'm like, first we say you don't have to make the cake. Now you don't have to have the vaccine. That slippery slope we warned about. Turned out it was you all along.
Yep. They're taking advantage of the slippery slope. So when the slippery slope works for them, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
When it works against them, no, must object. Cannot let it happen. What religious grounds?
Because, so basically, I don't know which vaccine it is because I don't care. I think it's AstraZeneca. So part of the, like, discovery of AstraZeneca involved the use of a gene line that comes from an aborted fetus in, like, the 1960s.
Mm.
And this aborted fetus gene line or whatever has been used in heaps and heaps and heaps of things. Yeah, like, so the religious objection is that the vaccine was created due to abortion.
Mm, right.
Yeah.
And it's just an objection to a specific vaccine. So if it was a different vaccine that didn't involve this, that'd be okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, all right. See, I mean, this is.
But obviously, it's an objection to the vaccine that we have enough of.
Yeah, of course it is.
It is unfortunate that way around.
Any reason.
If all the 20-year-old Christians were getting AstraZeneca and refusing Pfizer, it might be a completely different thing. So to bring it back to misinformation, I thought I would share with you one of the things that I remember being said during the marriage equality debate by an ex-Liberal politician who was, you know, I think Speaker of the House, long-term politician. At one stage, they thought she might be Prime Minister, Bronwyn Bishop, who during marriage equality said, if we allow marriage equality, they will sterilise disabled people.
What?
Yes. What her logic was, I don't know. But I have to say, I'm very proud of the fact that despite marriage equality passing like 4 years ago, no one has sterilised disabled people, despite what Bronwyn Bishop told us would happen.
I mean, that line of thinking, I can't even see the steps between point A and point B. Like, I just don't know how she leapfrogged from one to the other. It doesn't make sense.
Yes. It didn't make sense at the time. It still makes no sense.
But it upsets me that someone thought that was logical. Like, someone who was considered to be fairly intelligent, who somehow made that leap. It upsets me because not only is it stupid and insane, but it came out of the mouth of someone who was once thought to potentially be the first female Prime Minister of Australia.
Yeah. An influential, fairly respected, until towards the end of her career, I think, politician.
And you can't even blame it on senility. Like, you just... really? Yeah. I don't know how people think that they say these things and not go, huh, I'm not sure that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think we should leave with, do your own research. Question everything, because some of this stuff is just bizarre, and conspiracy theories, and misinformation does a lot of damage to minorities. So if you're not in a minority, but you hear these things, it's very important to go, wait a second, this doesn't feel right, or I'll just check if this is right. And then just, probably my final message is also, just leave minorities alone, if that's what they want.
Yeah.
Some minorities need your help, like refugees.
Mm.
But some just want you to butt out of their business, to be honest.
Yep. Agreed.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you next time.